Yeah, this it's funny. I read through this synopsis, and it started to feel a lot like How to Succeed in Business, a little bit. I mean, a little feel to that. Anyway, some interesting things that I learned about this. So this is a Ira Gershwin. This is a Gershwin.
Yes.
They call him New Gershwin.
Yeah.
And it debuted on Broadway in the 90s.
Yes.
Yet, this is all 1930s music. So how do you guys deal with the being a contemporary show, How to Succeed in Business, a little bit? I mean, a little feel to that. Anyway, some interesting things that I learned about this. So this is a Ira Gershwin. This is a Gershwin.
Yes.
They call him New Gershwin.
Yeah.
And it debuted on Broadway in the 90s.
Yes.
Yet, this is all 1930s music. So how do you guys deal with the being a contemporary show, but then really having 1930s type characters with 1930s type settings in music?
Well, a lot of musicals were written set in the 30s, yeah. And 40s, and 50s, and that's when a lot of them were written. So it's kind of just like another musical to us.
Yeah, just another musical to you.
Totally not born at all.
No, and the other thing I love about this is there's not a bad song in this show at all. This is like got all the top hits.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hey, this is Big Z of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntertonChamberRadio.com app today.
USA Radio News with Melody Burkett.
The Democrats are seeing what's happening, and they try and disrupt what's happening, but it's not a big deal. They stand up, they shout for a couple of seconds, and they get whizzed out. Not a big deal.
Donald Trump commenting on the protesters at his rallies. He insists there's no pattern of violence at the rallies.
There's no violence. There's love fest. These are love fests.
During an event in Hickory, North Carolina, the real estate mogul remarked that he feels there's anger both among his supporters and people who don't support his campaign. He says his supporters are angry because the country is being run incompetently. Trump was interrupted by protesters during his rally in North Carolina. Unlike previous events where he taunted them, he sat silently while the protesters were escorted away. There are reports Sarah Palin has canceled her appearance on behalf of Donald Trump today in Florida because her husband has been seriously injured in a snowmobile accident. According to NBC News, Todd Palin is in very serious condition. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, it's Angie Austin from Daybreak USA. Well, the winter may have been dry for you. Your hair may be a little brittle, and maybe you color your hair. Well, I've got great news for you. I told you last week one of my coworkers, Charlie, saw me in the hallway, and he said, hey, I've heard your Ovation commercials, and your hair really does look fantastic. I was kind of surprised, but hey, who doesn't want a compliment from a coworker who says your hair looks fantastic? All right, for those of us that color our hair, and a lot of us do, Ovation introduces their latest in color therapy treatment, the Ovation Cell Therapy Color Protection System. Now, with this new color protection system by Ovation, you'll experience less color fade and longer lasting color. And who doesn't want that? And for a limited time, Ovation will pay your shipping costs if you purchase the new Ovation Cell Therapy Color Protection System. The offer won't last long, and also, you know, you can get an introductory discount if you're a new Ovation hair care purchaser by selecting Angie Austin, Daybreak USA at checkout. OvationHair.com, OvationHair.com.
Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders is having some fun with Republican frontrunner Donald Trump.
Love always trumps hatred.
The Vermont senator campaigned in Ohio ahead of Tuesday's big primaries in several states. Over the weekend, Sanders accused Trump of being a pathological liar for accusing his campaign of sending people to disrupt Trump rallies. Two people are in critical condition and 28 others injured after an Amtrak passenger train derailed in Kansas early this morning. Seven cars derailed, including five that were on their sides. The injured were taken to hospitals. Federal investigators are looking into what caused the derailment. About 130 passengers were on board. And a man who rushed the stage at an Ohio Donald Trump rally will be in court today. Thomas DiMaccio is charged with disorderly conduct and inducing panic. Dayton police say DiMaccio planned to run on stage during Saturday's rally and grab the microphone to call Trump a racist. This is USA Radio News.
At GoDaddy, a domain name is the beginning of something awesome. Use it to create a website to promote your business. Open an online store to sell your products. Start a blog. Build your brand. You can even connect your domain to your LinkedIn or Facebook page. And GoDaddy customer support is always ready to help. What will you do with your domain name? Get a free domain with website from GoDaddy.com, starting at $1 a month. Annual purchase of website builder required. Price valid first year only. See website for details.
Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer in America, with about 50,000 deaths a year. But experts like Dr. Jordan Karlitz of Tulane University say few people know it can be detected, not just prevented, through colonoscopy.
Colonoscopy has the advantage of not only being able to see polyps, but to remove them at the exact same time, and that in itself will prevent the development of colorectal cancer, according to multiple studies.
The American College of Gastroenterology recommends screening for colorectal cancer starting at age 50 or age 45 if you're African American. Major risk factors include a family history of the disease or people who have a change in their bowel habits, including blood in their stool. Daylight saving time often leads to a spike in traffic accidents. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says the roads tend to get more dangerous for the first week after the clocks spring forward. Experts recommend going to bed an hour early for the next week in order to counter the effect of losing 60 minutes of sleep on Sunday morning. Millions in the South are bracing for more flooding today. The National Weather Service has issued flash flood warnings in Tennessee, Missouri, and Louisiana. The storms have caused six deaths so far and forced thousands to evacuate their homes. Roads remain closed in some of the hardest hit areas, and emergency vehicles are asking people not to travel unless absolutely necessary. And a captured American fighting for ISIS is from Virginia. Mohammed Jamal Amin was reportedly trying to get to Turkey when he surrendered to Kurdish forces in northern Iraq. I'm Melody Burkett.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon. The weather today is going to have rain. As you look out your window, you'll see. High near 49, east winds around 14 miles per hour, and a chance of precipitation is 80%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch is possible. Tonight, areas of drizzle with a chance of rain, cloudy with a low around 40. Northeast winds 8 to 13 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation is 50%, and the new precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch is possible. Tuesday, A chance of rain before 2 p.m. Cloudy with a high near 58, north winds 5 to 8 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is 30%. Tuesday night, patchy fog, otherwise mostly cloudy with a low around 45 and calm winds. Wednesday is a slight chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 65. Calm wind becoming southwest around 5 miles an hour in the afternoon, and a chance of precipitation is only 20%. Wednesday night, you have a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 43, and the chance of precipitation is now 30%.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Welcome to the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce radio show. This is Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host. My co-host is Carol Ricard. And we are here today for the first hour, every Monday between 2 and 3. And this is NAMI's hour. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office. We have no paid staff. We work out of our homes, which is good for the commute because, you know, it's not hard walking from the kitchen to the living room. But we try to help people who have someone in their family or someone they know or a neighbor or someone they work with who has a mental health issue. And we also try to help people who have a mental health issue get the right services that they need. We do this through various things. Right now, my wife and I are in the middle of teaching a 12-week family-to-family class, which is totally free, and it goes through all the what to do, what not to do in a crisis, medications, side effects, various illnesses, describing what the various mental illnesses. We run support groups for families who have someone or someone who knows someone. And it's all free. Everything we do is free. So if you'd like to reach out or you know someone that might be able to benefit by our services, our number is 908-284-0500, and you will get a recording because we can't man it 24/7, but we do check it at least twice a day, and we will guarantee that we will be back to you within 24 hours. We are very privileged today to have with us two gorgeous young ladies from Princeton House. Yeah, Robin, you're gorgeous. Robin was over there making a face.
You know?
We have Robin Marks, who I believe is an outreach coordinator. Is that right?
Very good.
Boy,
yeah.
I remembered. Wow.
Yeah.
And we have Sarah Ellis, who's a licensed clinical social worker and senior primary therapist at Princeton House Women's Programs, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Okay, I want to start with you, Robin.
Put my feet to the fire. Okay.
We'll give Sarah, you know, a chance to let her heartbeat go down, you know. So what have you been up to since our last get-together?
Well, Larry, it's a pleasure to see you here, and thank you very much. And it was a real, real nice pleasure to see Carol, too. For those in the listening audience, I'd like to let you know that these are two very wonderful, competent people in Hunterdon County. So it should be your pleasure to know Larry and Carol. So in terms of Princeton House is a behavioral health facility, and we are located, our inpatient unit is in Princeton, just on the verge of Montgomery and Princeton line. And we have a 110-bed behavioral health unit for psychiatric, co-occurring, and addiction issues. And we have 5 outpatient programs, and we have them in Princeton, North Brunswick, Hamilton, Morristown, and Eatontown. And in that, you stabilize an inpatient, and your treatment occurs in the outpatient. And it's, you go down to a partial hospitalization program, 5 days a week, 5 hours a day. And then you graduate to as your skills and your stabilization just becomes more fluid and more part of the individual, then you can titrate down to an IOP, individual outpatient program, 3 days a week for 3 hours a day.
Okay. Why don't you why don't you tell us how Princeton House got its start?
Well, I do have to really remind myself of this story because I know Larry loves this. About 43 years ago, Princeton Medical Center, the old hospital downtown Princeton, said they wanted to have a behavioral health unit, but not in the hospital. They wanted it freestanding. And they were looking around, and Kitty Carlisle from What's My Line had already purchased a building. And for those, it was first designed for those in the entertainment industry to come and kind of gradually fade into the sunset in Princeton in kind of an old folks home then. And she was a theater person. She wasn't a business person.
Right.
So when Princeton Medical Center was looking for a facility, they said, Kitty Carlisle, we'll take over your building. And so she sold it to them, and they developed it into a psychiatric facility. And that was, if you think 43 years ago, in some people that's not a big lifespan, but in the history of mental health treatment, that was 43 years ago, you would come with a trunk and stay for 3 months. Everyone at Princeton House is voluntary, so the doors were open and family just came and visited. They had nice therapeutic programs.
Right.
They did some studies. And then with the progression of mental health and treatment and the sophistication and the science research, it has all evolved to be what it is today.
Yeah. And it just... You know, I just think it's so cool that, you know, Kitty Carlisle had the building, you know. I know. Because I won't say how old I am, but I do remember her on, you know, was it What's My Line?
What's
she was
My
on,
Line?
Right?
What's My Line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. Scary. All right, Sarah.
Hi.
You're a licensed clinical social worker, correct?
Yes, I am.
And you're the primary therapist at... The House Women's
Princeton
Program.
House,
Princeton House Women's Program. So I usually ask this of most guests. Okay?
Go for it. I'm ready.
Okay. How did you get in this line of work?
To be honest, it really has been pretty much since high school. I've had an interest in working with women, specifically women's issues. Just having friends and family that have struggled with mental health issues themselves, I've just really been inspired and always found myself, you know, being interested in helping people and taking coursework and having, you know, internships that really just, you know, inspired me to work with people that needed mental health services. So it's been really kind of a passion since I was a teenager.
Right.
So I've really just been, you know, throughout college and throughout internships and through family and friends have been just inspired to work in the field.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because I ask, you know, I try to ask that to a lot of people or guests and such. And some people would say, oh, I like you.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do it since I was, you know, in high school. And others say, I don't know, it was a job available. I got into it and I like it now, you know, and I stayed, you know. But it's just curious to me how people get into their various lines of work, you know.
Yes, it's absolutely been a passion. So,
yeah.
Not a job that was just available.
Right,
so.
Right. You deal with emotional eating?
Yes, I do. Yes.
You want to describe what that is?
Absolutely. So emotional eating now, it's kind of come to be a pretty popular term in the community. It's really meant to be a term that describes eating disorder behaviors that are influenced by emotions. So both positive emotions and negative emotions. I think more and more in the community and amongst the patients that I've been working with, there seems to be a lot of, you know, folks out there that are having difficulty with regulating emotions and actually turn to food to cope, or lack thereof food. So through restricting behaviors, binging behaviors, purging behaviors. This has become kind of, you know, in some ways an addiction, but really kind of almost a primary coping skill for people that are struggling with a lot of mental health issues. So we're kind of looking more at eating disorder behaviors as almost having this underlying emotional component that's really driving the disordered behaviors.
Well, don't you find that everyone does it at some time? If they're under stress or
yes.
whatever, they'll, you know, grab potato chips and popcorn and whatever and eat.
Absolutely.
You know, or overeat, you know.
Absolutely. So the one thing I think it's just important to note is that I think at times we can all kind of relate to, well, you know, I felt stressed, so I grabbed a bag of potato chips,
right.
or it was a celebration. I wasn't really hungry, but I ate cake anyway. So it's really, you know, emotional eating becomes a problem when it's an ongoing behavior for people. And it's almost a primary way of regulating their emotions. So for folks that are occasionally, you know, mindlessly eating here and there, you know, and it's not, you know, impacting their emotional state or not serving a way to, you know, soothe an emotional state, that's considered, you know, normal. Mm. But I think when it becomes, you know, a primary way of someone's way of coping with either anxiety or depression, it can become pretty problematic, especially when it impacts their physical health.
Right, right. Now, I know you do women's
yes.
thing. Is there a similar program for male? For men?
So right now at Princeton House, we do not have a specific program for men's eating disordered or emotional eating disordered issues. It certainly is becoming more of a known issue in the community. But right now, we don't have a specific program for that. But there are programs out in the community that do gear and work specifically with men, too. Oh, Robin. Go for it.
You don't have to raise your hand, Robin. Nobody can see it.
Robin's jumping in.
Yeah, yeah. You think you're in school here.
Actually, the really neat thing about Princeton House that I've always enjoyed is when they see a need, they develop.
Mm-hmm. They do.
They do.
It's how the, you know, because I worked in women's trauma program mm-hmm. many, many, many years ago, and there was no men's trauma, but guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Now there is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think as we see, you know, there's more and more incidents of men struggling with these emotional eating issues. I think the more there becomes a known need, the more, you know, likely it will become part of Princeton House someday. So certainly keeping our eyes and ears open.
You know, it's like you said, it's true. You know, I mean, you find that when there's a problem that's not being addressed, a lot of times, you know, organizations such as yourself will face that, you know, and go and open a men's disorder. Because I can't imagine that it's only restricted to women.
Absolutely
I mean, I can
not,
understand that women may do it more so than men. I mean, I cannot get that. I mean, I don't even know if that's true or not, but I can understand if it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't understand, you know, not acknowledging that there's men with the same problem, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like saying mental health. Oh, only men get, you know, mental illness. Oh, yeah? Really?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's just, to me, it's just a balance, you know. And, you know, okay, fine, there may not be as many men as women right at this particular time. But I think it's good that you're looking into it or should look into it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, what are some of the warning? I can speak. What are some of the warning signs, you know, indicating that a person may have problems?
Yeah, I think some of them are noticing when, you know, either yourself or noticing other people when you eat, when you're feeling extremely stressed, and are just, you know, aware that that's becoming a primary way of coping with stress. Some people find that they struggle with emotional eating issues when they're eating when they're completely full, but still, you know, emotionally distressed and finding food as a main way of coping. Sometimes eating as a way to calm or soothe oneself is another sign that can be indicative of emotional eating issues. And just kind of all or nothing eating patterns. So patients that may, you know, be eating a large quantity of food at a time and then restricting for a long, you know, specific period of time. And really, you know, when it indicates that it's a emotional challenge is when it really is a sign of a problem. So those are some of the warning signs.
Do you find that if someone has like depression, that they would result to eating in their depression?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So some of the folks we see in a program is is either they're eating to completely soothe their depression, to try to, you know, feel better, or they're completely not eating anything and really trying to attempt to numb out by restricting food. Some people turn to, you know, over-exercising excessively, mm-hmm. or, you know, using laxatives or diet pills, but it tends to kind of be, you know, this vicious cycle where people may have a drive or attempt to lose weight and try to, you know, use food as a way to kind of cope with body image issues, but it also is serving more of an emotional function or purpose in that they're, you know, using food or lack thereof to cope with, you know, underlying emotional mental health okay. issues.
Okay. Robin, if I remember, this is a fairly new program.
Yes.
How did it get started?
Well, Princeton Medical Center has an eating disorder unit, a hospital-based eating disorder unit, one of the two in the whole state of New Jersey. And with since we created the new hospital, the state of the art. The therapists are trained in the most current modalities, that being DBT and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so we found that there were people falling through the cracks because to be in an inpatient hospital, your acuity or the seriousness of your issue had to be very paramount. You had to be a certain body mass index, you know, score and very ill. So the people who didn't meet that criteria weren't getting services because there was no program mm-hmm. around. And so that's why it's like, well, there's this whole group of people who are asking for help with no place to refer them to. And since we had the women's program and we had the skilled clinicians and we have the bright people to make a curriculum, it's like, well, let's develop this and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Another thing, yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Another thing I think we noticed as well is that we have a women's trauma program. And in fact, these women were coming for trauma treatment and were, you know, working with individual and group therapists. And what came to play is really that they were struggling with eating disorder issues themselves that were either related to their trauma symptoms or were completely separate. Maybe they had a history. Maybe they were active eating disorder symptoms. But, you know, there was a need that really mm-hmm. arose. And we realized, you know, okay, we need to have nutritional services. And they were being provided these services. And more, it just seemed like for some of the patients walking in the door, the emotional eating issues were really the primary concern for them that really needed to be treated prior to other mental health issues that they were struggling with. So we also saw that as well.
All right. If you have someone come in, mm-hmm. Do they get screened?
Mm-hmm.
Do they get checked to see if they have mental health issues and that's what's causing their problem?
Absolutely. So when patients come for an evaluation, they usually call our admissions department first.
And our admissions number is?
Well, we're going to have you do it anyway after, but that's fine. You can do it now.
I'm going to get in a couple times. Yeah.
Princeton House outpatient admissions number is 888-437-1610.
Put your glasses back on and do it again. Say it again.
Yes,
no, seriously, say it again.
Okay, 888-437-1610.
Okay.
So, yes.
Okay, so somebody comes in now and they've called that number.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They've called our admissions department.
And they said, okay, I think you should come in for, you know, evaluation or whatever. What happens then?
They will make an appointment to the appropriate program that makes sense for them, just giving their presenting symptoms, whether that's emotional eating issues, trauma issues, drug and alcohol. And then they are given an appointment with our psychiatrist, and they meet with the psychiatrist for an evaluation. And usually they're asked many questions about the symptoms that they're struggling with. And really from that assessment, our psychiatrist and the rest of our team will make the best recommendation that we can for the right track for them, knowing, too, that they may have trauma symptoms and may have also emotional eating symptoms as well. So we really try to, you know, focus on what's primary, but we have many different ways that we can also help women with other issues that they're struggling with co-occurringly.
Do you find that trauma plays a part in this disease also?
Absolutely.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Losing somebody that they love or whatever the case
Absolutely.
May be. Losing their job or their house or whatever.
Absolutely. A lot of the women that come to our program seem at times to be going through certain transitions in their life, either loss of a loved one, maybe a move, maybe having empty nest syndrome, all sorts of things that seem to be really at times a stressor for their emotional eating issues. So we certainly see, you know, many different types of themes that tend to really be sometimes a primary trigger that perhaps they had some eating disorder issues that they were managing to the best of their ability, but really with a major stressor that really seemed to increase the anxiety or depression, they've really turned to food to cope. So we certainly see a lot of those transitional type
just off
triggers.
The top of your head.
Sure.
If you have, I don't know, 100 people in your program, I don't know how many you have, but say it's 100 arbitrarily. What percentage do you think of those have a mental health issue as opposed to not having one but are eating, overeating because of trauma or something, lost their job or house or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to put a number on it. I think more women than not struggle with issues around food as a way to cope with emotions.
Okay.
At any given moment, I don't think I could put a number on it. Certainly, we do have some women that come to our program that really have a pretty healthy relationship with food, so I don't want to minimize that. But certainly, you know, we not only have our emotional eating track, but we also have food and wellness and nutritional groups for the women that are in the other tracks. So say that's really not their primary issue, but they're having depression and anxiety, they're really getting some support and some sense of how to manage emotions around food and how to really eat as balanced as they can to help their recovery process.
In your program, how many women can it serve?
The emotional eating program or the
women's program? The one you're in.
I think about 15 to 20.
Okay.
It really ebbs and flows. It's not a really big program right now. We have, you know, one or two dietitians, so we have kind of means in which we can't have a large amount of people, and we also want to keep it, you know, a close-knit group where they feel like they're getting, you know, as specialized services as possible.
Right, right.
So I'm not sure the exact number on the cap, but...
Well, but even 15 to 20 is more than it was.
Absolutely.
You know, so, you know, it's an improvement right there, you know.
And we've had women that come in that have had, you know, eating disorder treatment before. Some women have never gotten treatment for emotional eating issues. So it certainly has kind of a vibe of different women from different, you know, places in life. And
what is, in your opinion, what's the difference between emotional eating and binge eating?
Emotional eating, so when people traditionally think of binge eating, that typically seems to be an amount that's larger than normal. So sometimes they classify that as being like over 1,000 calories to 2,000 calories. It typically seems to be actually quantifyingly a large amount. Emotional eating doesn't necessarily have to look that way. It can look like binge eating, but it can also look like overeating or eating when not hungry. So there's not necessarily an exact quantifying amount, but it really, emotional eating is meant to serve more, it's meant to help soothe or, you know, comfort or manage an emotion, whereas binge eating is a little bit more focused on the quantity of the amount of food that's consumed. But certainly they can overlap.
Yeah.
Binge eating can be emotional eating.
But isn't binge eating, they eat a whole bunch of stuff and then
purge
it?
Not necessarily. So there's several different eating disorder diagnoses, but there are there is binge eating, which is, you know, eating a larger amount than normal, that would lead someone to feel, you know, pretty uncomfortably full. And they don't necessarily have to be doing anything to expel or undo the binge. So there's that type of binge eating. And then there's what's called bulimia, which is when people do, you know, engaging in a binge can be part of that disorder. But then there's usually a purging component. So either they're self-induced vomiting,
right.
Sometimes over-exercising or using laxatives or diet pills to get rid of that binge. So there's, you know, there's binge eating and there's bulimia, and they do look different.
Right.
You
know, it's interesting because I do along with another, Alicia Stevenson, who you know, we do a monthly presentation at Educational Services. And one of the PowerPoint slides we use is about a young man who was 22 years old who died at night in the middle of his 1,000 push-ups. Mm. And he was 79 pounds. Mm. And, you know, people say, well, why didn't his parents? Well, he's 20-some-odd years old. He's not living at home, you know. You know, and right. The parents aren't bathing him anymore or things like that. So, you know, it just he can wear clothes to hide it or whatever, mm. you know. But and you stop and think, 1,000 push-ups a night, and he was doing that for God knows how long. And, you know, it's just a shame, you know, mm-hmm. because it happens, yeah. you know, and unfortunately. Okay. We've gotten – a woman comes to you or calls mm-hmm. the mission number there, that 800-888 number.
888. 888.
What is it?
437-1610.
Okay. They call that, and then they make an appointment, mm-hmm. and they come in for an evaluation. Mm-hmm. I assume they fill out all sorts of forms and everything, mm-hmm. and a psychiatrist meets with them, mm-hmm. right? And the psychiatrist either says they have a mental health issue or they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty much, I guess it's yes or no. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, where do you go after that to dig in and find out why they're doing this?
Hmm. I think typically the patients that come through the doors typically do present mental mm-hmm. health issues. I don't often, if at all, hear anyone that really comes through our doors that the psychiatrist meets with and kind of thinks, I don't think you have any mental health issue. Sometimes they make their best guess on what the diagnosis is, and you know the patient may or may not agree or disagree with that, and sometimes that leads to further discussion. But almost always, the patient usually has some type of mental health issue, and then typically further assessment and discussion is needed to really fine-tune what tracks the best fit, what diagnosis is the best fit. Mm-hmm. That sometimes doesn't take just an hour to really figure out. And sometimes the patient, you know, is emotional on that day and is having difficulty being honest sometimes or really expressing what they're feeling and the symptoms they're struggling with. But most often they're coming in and there's an agreement with both the patient and psychiatrist that they have a mental health issue.
A lot of times people know what people want to hear when they're mm-hmm. asking them questions and they know how to say it, you know.
Right.
So it's not like necessarily telling the truth. They're right. telling the person what they think that person wants to hear. Right. And it could be a psychiatrist. It could be a psychologist. It could be a nurse. It could be anybody, you know. Mm-hmm.
You have to realize, too, that all this is voluntary. So
right.
people don't usually just on a whim call a number for an outpatient services. You know, there's an old saying in AA that nobody accidentally walks into an AA meeting.
Right.
So if somebody's calling our centralized admission, mm-hmm. it might be years in the making, and it might not be real evident when they're talking to the psychiatrist, but something's been brewing for them to first talk to our clinicians on the admission line and then to agree to come for an evaluation with the doctor. So if they've made those two steps, there's already a commitment level mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. seeking some sort of treatment
right.
about whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we have Robin Marks, Outreach Coordinator from Princeton House, and Sarah Ellis, who's a senior primary therapist at Princeton House Women's Program. And she is also a licensed clinical. I can speak. I swear.
Well, you said precipitate.
Not
a word. It's 5 times before.
Lincoln. I'm going to skip it. LCSW. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Carol Ricard. And we have with us today two wonderful ladies. Robin Marks is the outreach coordinator from Princeton House. And Sarah Ellis, who's a LCSW, Licensed Clinical Social Worker. I stumbled over that about 3 minutes ago. And she's also the senior primary therapist at Princeton House Women's Programs. I know we were just talking about, you know, binge eating and emotional eating. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand, I don't know whether I'm just guessing or what, but I understand that dialectical behavioral therapy is mm-hmm. used in your
treatment.
There you go. Yes. Thank you.
I was very impressed that Larry remembered all those words.
Yes.
And he could say them, too. Yeah.
It's another word stumbler.
Maybe not correctly, but I could say them. You know?
Yeah. DBT for short.
Yeah. DBT.
You know, I can't stand acronyms. I hate them. Yeah. You know, the first 6 years I was on the mental health board, they gave us a book about yay thick, you know, mm-hmm. and had all these acronyms. And I said to the lady that's in charge, I said, you really expect us to remember all these? You know? And, you know, I mean, everything has an acronym and it just drives me insane, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, anyway, mm-hmm. but I guess that's what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. anyway, DBT.
Yes.
You want to explain what that is?
Sure. So it's really, you know, a pretty up-and-coming, very well-known research treatment, research-based treatment that really has been shown to be one of the most helpful treatments specifically for emotional eating issues like bulimia and binge eating, and even more for anorexia. And really what it is, it's a form of therapy that's meant to help people that have difficulty regulating their own emotions. So really a lot of what we talked about the emotional difficulties that people right. have that then, you know, trickle down to eating issues, this form of treatment really helps women better understand their emotions, better learn skills how to cope with their emotions, and really gives them, you know, kind of a concrete set of skills to manage, you know, any kind of difficulty that they may face in life. There's, you know, dialectical behavior therapy. It's kind of a combination between cognitive behavioral therapy, which is focusing on challenging thoughts, challenging behaviors, and also it has a mindfulness component, which is actually kind of derived from Buddhist teachings and talks a lot about mindfulness. So the DBT work really focuses a lot on helping patients not only change their emotional state, but also accept their emotional state. Because a lot of times women who haven't had DBT before have somewhat felt invalidated that they have to change these behaviors, change how they're feeling, change how they're thinking, and not really learn skills to just accept where things are at, whether that's their situation, their emotions. So it's been this really neat and nice way of, you know, helping women, you know, develop skills to manage the emotional component that, you know, tends to, you know, become problematic when they can't manage that and then, you know, comes into being more of an eating issue. So another cool thing about it as well is that it really helps the women manage other issues, whether that's, you know, self-harm behaviors if they're coming in with other behaviors or suicidality. It really helps, again, the women develop some concrete skills to manage those symptoms.
And when they do this therapy, what do they focus on? Mm-hmm. The illness or the eating or...
It's a great question.
You know.
Yeah, so the program is actually doesn't talk, especially in the group setting, much about specific eating symptoms. It actually focuses more on lessons and teachings of these life skills to help the women manage emotional situations that lead to the eating disorder.
Okay.
So there's actually four different modules that are taught almost like in a classroom setup in lessons, core mindfulness skills, emotion regulation skills, distress tolerance skills, and interpersonal effectiveness skills are all these kind of lessons and teachings that they're learning from the therapist in group therapy. A lot of times learning skills and doing homework on them to manage emotional situations that tend to then lead to eating disorder behavior. So they're actually not talking very much in group, if at all, about the eating disorder. It tends sometimes to come up more in individual work because you're really targeting that specific issue with the skills.
Right.
But again, sometimes, and I think this kind of goes back to a major point, it's not all about the food or not all about the weight and body image. There's this huge emotional underlying, you know, component to these issues that are really targeting and really doing it well through DBT. And it's allowing these patients to feel like, you know, oh, I have so much relief emotionally. I don't have to turn, you know, I don't have to turn to food and I can look at food in a more normalized way. Which, you know, really, again, it not only treats the eating disorder issues, but it really treats the mood issues, the depression, the anxiety.
Right.
So it's been a really, really successful form of treatment that we found at Princeton House.
That's good.
Yeah.
Carol, you said you had a question?
I did. I was sitting here.
Did you forget it? Or?
No, I didn't forget it. I didn't know what questions you got over there. So
it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Well, I was listening to you, Robin, talk about the inpatient eating disorder, you know, program that Princeton Medical Center started and the outpatient. I thought to myself, wow, eating, just, you know, emotional eating. Well, I don't have anorexia nervosa. So could you guys, you know, help clarify that a little bit difference, that there's kind of different degrees that we're talking about?
Sure. Well, I guess I'll start wrapping. So at the emotional eating track, I first want to say we see, you know, eating disorder diagnosis, we see all of them. We see anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, and another one called eating disorder, you know, not otherwise specified, which is kind of, you know, you don't fall into one specific category but are struggling with different symptoms at different times. We really do see all those different types of patients with different eating disorder symptoms in the emotional eating track, but they do have to be medically cleared and medically stable to be at our program. We have a full-day program and a half-day program. And usually these women, sometimes they're being referred by an outpatient therapist. Sometimes they are stepping down from a hospital, but they have to be pretty stable. And that, you know, oftentimes is in terms of weight. They need to have a stable weight. Their lab work needs to be stable and normalized. So we do a lot of work sometimes making sure they're safe to be in our program, because really if they need more medical monitoring, they're probably not, they're not the right fit for us.
So, and that's kind of the difference, and they need the medical monitoring.
I guess that's the line in the sand. And if you need such medical monitoring that you have to be an inpatient hospital, now they get the treatment at all, but they are monitoring all the time. Because you are in a hospital, your medical condition, where this is something that's addressed, and there's a nurse with the program the whole time the patients are there, and the psychiatrists are medical doctors, but it's not the primary focus versus the skill building as a focus on the outpatient.
Well, and you know what's best about those kinds of programs is you have to be in life, you know, so you get to have to, you know, when you're in a hospital setting, you're kind of removed from life. And so it becomes this little cocoon and then you step right back out of it. And, you know, what's nice is people, I mean, have to be at that level of care. You have to be participating in life.
Yes.
And practicing, you know, the tools that you're learning. Yes. So it's a great setting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be. You have to be pretty self motivated to be in our program. So I know with eating disorder issues or emotional eating issues, some people, you know, often aren't ready to really, you know, work the recovery process, and that can be challenging. And given we're, you know, they're not staying at our program overnight, and they are going back home or going back to work or school, they do really have to be pretty self motivated and, you know, work really hard to use the treatment that they're getting to manage the symptoms outside of a program.
And that's where it can sometimes be frustrating for a family member, because that family member may want that person to be in treatment more than
Absolutely.
What that person might want to be in.
So, yes, we treat women who they are 18 and older in the emotional eating program. And we do have family services at our program, too, which are great. Anytime, you know, the patient feels that it would be helpful to have their family come to program, whether that's a parent, a partner, you know, a friend, we can invite them in for an in-person family session with their therapist. And we also do have a family education night once a month that's run by a therapist and a dietitian, and really just helping families better understand these issues, what things to say, what things to not say, how to, you know, act and behave around food issues, and, you know, really try to help them feel as skilled as they can to help their loved ones at home or not at home. So we do also work with families as well.
Is there any other form of therapy you use besides what we talked about here?
Yeah. So, well, that is our primary treatment modality. We do have expressive art therapies. We have yoga. We have art art therapy as well for women. We do have, you know, a trauma education course. We really try to design the treatment for each patient, you know, given what their symptoms are. So we feel like, you know, they've really been working the DBT skills well and really are engaged in that program, we'll allow them to go a little bit more to the other groups that might be helpful with other symptoms. But DBT is the main form of treatment, but we do have have some expressive arts groups and do try to add in, you know, kind of more the extracurricular-based groups.
When you say art, are you talking about painting, drawing, or...
All of the above.
Music.
Yes, we do have a music group as well.
That's why they call it expressive therapy.
Well, I had someone on. Actually, I had two ladies on. One was a artist and one was a musician, and they did therapy, and they said for people with mental health in a, you know, mental health situation, hospital type thing, and they said that when people would come in all stressed out and all angry and what have you, and just sitting down, and some of them with music and some of them with art, it just helped calm them down and, you know, get them breathing normally. And, you know, so I just, you know, just thought of the.
Absolutely. I know, mean, we teach.
Because I would imagine some women come in and they're all hyper.
Oh,
and, you know, I mean, then everybody's
anxious.
Coming in and say, oh, gee, cure me, you know.
Right. Absolutely. So, we help these women realize, I mean, if they enjoy art, they enjoy drawing, we help them realize, hey, that might be actually a really great coping skill to use, you know, after a meal or during a meal, depending on their emotional situation, to really help them manage. So, you know, we really have a purpose for having all these different types of work, you know, be a part of their treatment.
Sure, whatever works.
Yep. You know, absolutely.
It's the whole thing. You know, if it works, keep it up.
Yep.
You know. But it's just, I was just curious, you know, because it's like what different things work for different people.
Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, we're dealing for the last 19 years or so with mental health issues and people with mental health issues and families who have people with mental health issues. It's, you know, some people don't take meds and they do other things and it works.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it works, don't change it. You know, I mean, that's fine. Don't, you know, the girl we were talking about earlier from California. You know, she exercises, runs, and does holistic stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, you know, does it work? She says, yeah. I says, don't stop.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Keep it up. You know, I says, just keep in the back of your mind that maybe down a road sometime you may have to consider taking a med along with what mm-hmm. you're doing. Mm-hmm. But right now, don't stop. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. do it. Mm-hmm. Why change it? You know,
absolutely.
And it's the same thing with, you know, any of these things. You know, mm-hmm. If it's working.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some women in our program do take medication. Some do not.
Right.
Some find that once they eat, you know, in a normal way, that helps, you know, really regulate their mood quite significantly. So,
right.
you know, it takes some figuring it out together and giving the best recommendations
sure.
that
sure.
make sense for the patient.
That's what I said with the art and the music and anything mm-hmm. that works. I mean, if it works, do it, you yep. know, because, you know, it's everything isn't prescription drugs. You know, I'm not saying I'm opposed mm-hmm. to them, you know, but it's just that they're not for everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, some people just can't take the side effects of them, you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but so if something works, don't change it, you know.
Just to that point, that's one thing I've always liked about Princeton House. They're not doing these expressive therapies because it's in vogue or anything else. They've always done these because their philosophy was, we're going to give them a lot of doors, and maybe one door will work for mm-hmm. them. Like in the inpatient unit, they go down to yoga, and you see a 25-year-old dragging his feet. And says, I don't want to go to yoga. You know, the yoga moms go to yoga. I'm not going. And then you do a patient exit interview, and he goes, well, believe it or not, I felt the best when I was laying solid on that mat, and I just felt connected to my whole body. So you might have opened up yeah. a door that they right. would have never gone down before.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. You know, when you have people who come in, mm-hmm. Do they all do it the same way? Do they eat constantly or just when they're dinner time? Or do they eat snack food, regular food, all sorts of food?
All the above. I mean, okay. we see some common trends, such as, you know, women that maybe have never eaten breakfast or don't like to eat breakfast because they feel like eating from the moment they wake up will lead them on a path to gain weight. Mm. And there's this myth that eating breakfast will, you know, cause someone to gain more weight. So we see, you know, similar trends such as that.
Of course, that's supposed to be the best meal of the day is right. breakfast, but, you know.
Right. When we, in fact, really teach them, actually, yeah. breakfast is a requirement for nutrition and,
right.
and mental
right.
health, and it's really necessary support. You know, we've, you know, have patients that really struggle with, you know, eating with family members that perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, avoid eating with certain people, but then later on restrict so much and attempt to try to not eat that later on it sets themselves up emotionally for a binge because they're
right.
emotionally
right.
and physically starving at that point. So, I mean, there's common trends that we see, but we see people that, you know, feel really uncomfortable eating, you know, fruits and veggies. And then we see women that feel extremely uncomfortable eating, you know, cupcakes and cake. So
right.
it's really, it's such a wide vast of different issues. And yet the women really kind of come together and realize, like, you know, we may have different issues, but we are still all struggling with managing our emotions. And that's kind of one common core theme that we see with the women that really helps the DBT therapy, you know, be successful for
mm-hmm.
them, because they're finding things that really are skills to help them manage their emotions
right.
and be successful.
In the next 3 to 4 minutes, you have anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to bring up?
Are we already out of our hour?
Just
We're
about.
We're going to have to come back, Larry.
Well, you're going to have to come back.
Yeah. Sarah, I'm learning a lot from Sarah.
Well, I would like you to.
I have a quick question.
Go
yes.
ahead.
You mentioned some sites earlier, the different sites. Is this program at all of the sites, or is it?
Yeah, so yes. I will speak to that. It's not yet officially at all of the sites, but it's
okay.
in the works.
It's unofficially.
Okay.
I don't know that I have the liberty to announce anything as of yet, but I do know
it's
really,
moving that direction.
It's in the works.
Right.
So don't hesitate to look on our website or
yeah.
call admissions. for the other sites, as the Princeton location has been so popular with the emotional eating track, and there's been a need. And in fact, we have women coming from an hour to up to 2 hours almost coming to our program because they know it's unique in nature and they need the help. So knowing and hearing the demand, it's in the works for the other sites. And stay tuned on our website or call admissions to really find that out, because I don't know any official news, but yes, it is absolutely in the program development work that we're working on with the track.
Because that's what you have done historically, is kind of started in one, you know, kind of one location and then taken something and expand that to the other locations. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, good.
Just the women's program started just in the inpatient unit as an outpatient program, and now we have 5 sites of it.
Yeah.
And each site has 4 to 6, 7 different tracks depending on the need of the woman. Like Sarah is saying, and you answered that very well, by the way.
Thank you.
And I do want to give that number one more
time. No, I was going to say, if someone wanted to reach out, is there, you know, an email or is there an email address or a website that they could go to get more information? If so, what is it?
The website is www.princetonhouse.org. So really, princetonhouse.org, and you could get inpatient and outpatient.